Hey, this is Greg Berger, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the Circle of Trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
Circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hi, this is Chuck.
This is Greg.
And this is Dan, and we are Talking Circles, brought to you by GeekCast Radio Network, the podcast that is undergoing the plague. We are all kind of a little bit sick under the weather, but we're going to power through. It may be us recovering from the epicness that was Baltimore Comic Con. This is the third year in a row that we went there, and we have a lot to report on the comings and goings of that in our second segment. But before we get to that, how's the week been going for you guys?
Week has not been the greatest. As you mentioned, we're all a little under the weather, so I think we could all agree it could have been better. I think Greg probably had it the worst, as I'll let him articulate, but I was feeling kind of shitty myself, but was able to go to the doctor and get some good medicine, so I'm pretty much back to like 95%, so
nice.
Not too bad, but just enough to get excited for NFL kickoff weekend, so I'm super stoked for that.
Nice. Greg, how are things going with you?
pretty freaking awesome, Dan, as you could tell by my voice.
Yeah. We have now have sexy Greg on the podcast.
Yes,
he's gonna break out into some blues soon. So.
Just got a call. They want you to do a Rolo commercial.
Sure. I've been really sick. I even went took a ride to the emergency room in an ambulance because I nearly passed out and threw up everywhere. So that was a lot of fun. And I spent a lot of time in the freaking ER. Don't know why. I felt fine as soon as they got me on the ambulance and they had IV in me and sticking me with other meds. I felt completely fine. But they took me to the hospital. Just a throat infection, essentially. And so the infection, like, really took advantage of me.
Oh, no. Jeez, yeah.
Yeah, not fun, but...
Well, that sucks. Yeah, it was... I've been sick myself. What should mention is Greg and Chuck are both down at my location for Baltimore Comic Con, and my son was sick. I'm good. I think he is patient zero in this case. He had a cold and eventually pink eye, so he was out for this week. But
see, I saw him rubbing his eye, and his eye was very had a lot of junk goop in it and stuff. I figure there was something up with the eyes.
Yeah,
he was rubbing them a lot.
Yeah, we took him to the doctor and got him drops. I will say that there are a few things more difficult in the world than trying to put eye drops in a 16-month-year-old. He closes his eyes really well. He's just like, you know, like shut them and like they're hard to pry open them. I feel like I'm like the guys from A Clockwork Orange trying to pry his eyes open just to drop in these eye drops. But
Dan, you should try a 31-year-old me with eye drops.
I haven't tried that yet. Yeah, might be a little bit more challenging.
Just a little bit. I'm one girlfriend I had, she was trying to put drops in my eye, and she was like hitting me. She's like, "Why don't you just leave them open?" I'm like, "It's not me. They just close automatically."
It's a reflex, you know. It's how it goes.
And then she was like, "Look, it's Stan Lee." And then she dropped them in there.
But yeah, so that's been crappy, but it has been a week of comics. Like, you know, we went to Baltimore Comic Con, which was a great time, and which buying and listening and hearing about comics, and also got to read a few. And Chuck, I know you did too. I just wanted to bring one up real quick. And it's during Baltimore Comic Con, one of the panels that I went to was the Boom panel from Boom Studios. They didn't really go over much like regarding releases or that. They wasn't really a focus on, hey, look at what's coming out for us. It was more of a discussion-based thing. But one thing that Frank Cho was there, and he has a new series now with Boom that just came out this week. Skyborn. It's the first like series that Frank Cho has had that has not been a Marvel series for some time now. I think it's almost been 10 years or so. He's, you know, had an exclusive deal with Marvel. He's been doing Hulk and Savage Wolverine, and even at the panel he was mentioning that it felt good to kind of take a break from Marvel and do something different and new. And
yeah, he has also been doing Wonder Woman variant covers, but he is off that now since him and who was it, Greg Rucka, were having like issues with each other, so he's off that now.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah. So Skyborn number one. It's kind of a little hard to explain. I know, Greg, you picked it up but have not read it yet. So I'm gonna.
Yeah, I've been reading the back of my eyelids for most of the week.
Yeah. So I will hold off on any type of spoilers, but just giving people the kind of the premise of Skyborn. It is created, written, and illustrated by Frank Cho, so it does look great. I mean, I will say that from right off the bat. I am a fan of Frank Cho's art, and say what you will, but he can draw Rimmon really well. And the focus of this, who seems to be apparently who will be perhaps the main character in this story, it's still yet to be determined. Is this woman character who basically the book opens up and she is requesting this sword from this bald individual, and there apparently is something important about this sword. We don't really know what, and they don't want to give it up. She's willing to pay for it, but they feel like that it's too important to give away. So it leads to a pretty kick-ass action sequence, and without giving anything away, I was actually kind of surprised in just how it's not like overly gruesome, but it is certainly a mature book in that end. I don't know if you guys remember in Con Air, they have that Nicolas Cage has that thing moment where he like uses his palm of his hand to like hit the guy's nose to kill him instantly by like jamming the brainstem thing into the back of his or the nose into the back of his brain or whatever. I don't even know if that's actually real. But let's just say they kind of take that idea and like to the next level, because she's almost like a Wonder Woman with street clothes and but has no restraint in a way. So far in this issue, really much of this issue is really one kind of extended action sequence, all over trying to get this sword and what it means, and you know they think they have it, and further things happen. So it does kind of leave on somewhat of a cliffhanger and makes you think, okay, maybe this is going in a different direction than expected. There is not a huge amount to go on in this issue with that, though. I tend to prefer like first issues that focus more on characters or at least giving me an idea of what the story will be. Here you get little elements of it, really, but it's a fun, like enjoyable ride, but there's not much more there. Like there are, let's say, certain reveals of certain things that could be interesting if done well, so I certainly will be picking up issue two. But overall, I wouldn't say it's like anything drop down amazing. It, like I said, it's a fun read, quick read. It looks great, but you know, it's nothing that I wouldn't say this is like a new level for Frank Cho. It could be potentially, but as a first issue, it was more just, hey, we're gonna have a lot of fun with this book, and it's almost like Frank Cho's been with Marvel, so he's not been able to kind of hit the level of violence that he likes to do with his drawing, and he decided to turn it off this issue kind of right away. So I would recommend it. Give it a shot for the first, and see what you think. But
because at least it's gonna look good, knowing Frank Cho. Like you said, he does draw women very well.
And his action sequence, like his action, like set pieces and staging, looks great. Like it's like, yeah. It's. I mean, he's a veteran. He's one of the best in comics today. So like he knows how to stage action for it to be fluid and easy to follow and fun. But like I said, it's just as a writer, I think that's where as of right now he's not. His writing is not at the same level as his artistic ability, but it can he could get there if the story develops further as issues go on. So
yeah, he has very expensive commissions, let me tell you. Sketch cover for $800, I think I saw. He will do a sketch cover for $800.
This comic was a lot cheaper than that. So
yes.
And he sketched all of it. So that was the cover and the
original Dan.
I know. We'll get to that next.
Way to work the system, Dan.
Yeah.
I think he found a loophole. He should probably exploit this.
I know, I know. Actually, I went to a store and they had them everywhere. It was insane. Really? Yeah.
This might actually catch on.
It will, but only for a small segment of the population. So, I know I read something more recent, and Chuck, I know you also, even though you were down with the sickness, you had some opportunity to read some of the books you picked up from Baltimore Comic Con, so I'd be interested in hearing what you read and what you thought about it.
Well, I was able to pick up a couple of newer Avengers stories. I say newer, but it's not really newer. They're like 5 years old, but new to me, because I kind of like, that's like right before that was when I kind of stopped reading the new stuff.
Yeah. Is it still Bendis writing?
For Marvel. One of them is Bendis. One of them is Mark Millar or Miller, however you say it. So I guess I'll just talk about them quickly because it's probably fresh in people's mind. They probably remember these stories. But the first one is Ultimate Avengers. It's from Ultimate Avengers number 1 through 6. And it's like this, it caught my eye because it had Blade on the cover and it was, you know, talking about this sort of organized vampire takeover and everything. And obviously I love everything to do with Blade. I love all the movies and everything. I like a lot of the stuff in the comics with Blade. So I was like, I'll pick this up. It looks pretty interesting. You know, can't be that bad. I like Mark Miller and everything. So I got to say, I was pretty disappointed with this book, to be honest.
So is this in the Ultimate Universe or is this in the 616 being?
This is in the Ultimate Universe.
Okay.
It's Ultimate Avengers, and they talk about the Ultimates, and there's a lot of weird crap going on that I was kind of lost. Like, I know I read the first couple Ultimate stories, but obviously there was a lot that happened after those.
Yeah.
And you know, in this story, there's like a clone of the Hulk, and there's all these random things. And so they kind of start off with Blade, and he's tracking these vampires, and there's something big going down. And basically they start biting the superheroes and turning them and stuff. And they get the clone of the Hulk, and they get a couple of other big shots. They end up getting Daredevil, but it's like this new weird Daredevil that I didn't know. It's like this new kid. And they ended up biting Stick, so they got him to turn, and it's like, it's just kind of this weird story. And at first I was kind of on board, but like really as it goes along, I started to notice like kind of how disappointed I was in the writing.
Yeah.
It just seems like, I guess it seems like a really low reading level to me. Like, I don't know. The dialogue is extremely simplistic, and like it's even kind of like corny at times. Like, it just didn't feel very mature to me. It seemed like a very simplistic story. I was looking for something deeper, something a little darker, especially with Blade involved and that whole part of the Marvel Universe. So I was a little bit disappointed. It was a pretty cool story. You know, Captain America actually plays a significant role in it, which is kind of surprising. Blade was not the type of Blade that I'm used to. I thought he was, like, softer than he should have been, and stuff like that wasn't quite as gritty as I like, but yeah, I was just curious if you had ever come across that story or any of you guys or anything.
No, I kind of stopped with most of the Ultimate stuff after like the volume 2, I would think, of so I yeah.
Yeah.
I never read any of the Ultimate stuff.
Yeah, it was really strange. I mean, I think, you know, the premise for the story is a good idea. I think it could really work, but like for whatever reason to me, it just seemed like too simplistic, and it felt like it was written for someone much younger than me for some reason. Like, I guess compared to some of the other stuff.
I think the Ultimates was supposed to be like the gateway for younger kids to get into Marvel comic books and stuff like that.
I feel like at this point in the timeline where this story took place, I felt like they would have like sort of advanced a little bit, I guess, but I don't know. It wasn't quite what I was expecting. It was still a decent read. But enough about that one. The second one I'll talk about is, this is from the mainstream universe, right before the Siege storyline. And this is a Dark Avenger story. And the reason I picked this one up is because it's about Molecule Man, and I love Molecule Man. He's one of my favorite characters for whatever reason. I think he's really cool. So I was like, all right, I'll check that out. You know, I'm kind of familiar with the Dark Avengers. You know, that's right around the time where I kind of stopped reading. And so I was sort of familiar with them, but I had never read this particular story. This one is written by Bendis.
Oh.
Gotta say, I kind of enjoyed his writing in this one. I really liked it. I liked him, you know, dabbling in the crazy with Norman Osborn and Sentry. I think there's a lot of cool, you know, I don't know what you would call it, but it's sort of a mirror effect there, like where they're both kind of crazy. But Norman Osborn's more of the evil crazy, so you have him trying to help Bob Reynolds. It's like, that's not the guy that you want helping you with your mental problems. But I really enjoyed the writing in that. And I will say, though, it sort of ruined it at the end, as in classic Bendis fashion, I guess. But they basically, they just made Sentry just way too powerful.
And yeah, that was a common theme for a good, you know, 6-7 years.
Yeah, and I understood that he, you know, when I was reading, it was starting to get on my nerves a little bit then, you know, and they made him, like, really strong, which is fine, you know, Superman-level strength, something like that. He's got the power of a million exploding suns, whatever that means. And but in this story, like, I mean, I hate to give anything away, so spoiler, if anybody wants to read this, skip ahead half a minute, but at the end of the story, Bendis has Sentry defeat Molecule Man. He kills him. I'm like, no, that doesn't happen. Like, Molecule Man is literally one of the highest people in the Marvel Universe. Like, he's easily top 10, maybe even top 5 most powerful. Like, he's way up there. Like, he went toe-to-toe with the Beyonder and everything. So it just seems like they're making up powers for the Sentry because he's like, you know, he finds his new power in this story that he can manipulate molecules. And I'm like, oh, like, that's convenient. Okay.
It's kind of like the little kid that you're playing a game. And it's like, oh, I have that power too. It's like, no, you can't right. just. Yeah.
It's like, oh, you have this new unstoppable power. Well, I have that too now. So, yeah. And oh, yeah. And I'm better.
Hated the Sentry.
Yeah. And I was curious of your thoughts, Dan, because I know that was kind of a favorite character of you for a little while. But I don't know if you got away from him for the same reason that I did, or
I liked him when you first started, basically because I think a mystery behind him, like when the New Avengers, like the New Avengers first relaunched, and he was just like, I don't know, I liked the look of him. I thought, you know, like I liked kind of where he was headed, but I do think they just ran out of things to do with him. Like, he was a little over too powerful then, and. Yeah. Like, his character was the ultimate plot contrivance, where it was like whatever you needed at the time he was able to do. And I think, like, I don't know, I liked where it started, unlike most people, because I know everyone hated him to begin with, but even I had a turn on it when it just became evident that he was more a hindrance to nearly every story than a help. And I think it's a big reason why they eventually killed him off, spoiler alert. So
yeah, and I kind of liked him in the beginning too, and I think actually they had a good thing going with, you know, his whole mental instability and trying to, you know, battle the void and him taking over and everything. Like, that's a good kind of plot line for them to go with, and I think they should have kept going with that instead of just giving him more powers.
I think that storyline became confused, and they didn't really have a focus on it. It was kind of all over the place, I think.
Yeah. And I don't know what the reason for that is, if it's, you know, too many different writers, or if it's I have no idea. But I was reading some interesting things online about it after I read this, and there were a lot of like fan theories circulating that the Sentry was the Beyonder, and they're like, oh, that would explain how he has all these like powers and everything like that. And, you know, obviously you can't really say for sure that that's the case, but it just seemed kind of annoying, because as a Superman fan myself, I hear a lot of people's complaints that, you know, Superman has all these random powers and he's just unstoppable and everything. But I feel like Superman is very unstoppable. He's very vulnerable to certain things like magic, obviously kryptonite and things like that, certain telepathies and stuff. So, but the Sentry, to me, like, they just took that to a whole other level. They start giving him matter manipulation powers, and, you know, now he's on the level of like a Beyonder or something like that. That's just like, it's too much for me, and I really couldn't enjoy the character because of that. I felt like it kind of ruined the story at the end, because, like, you know, one of the reasons why I like Molecule Man is this guy that's so immensely powerful, but he just wants to be a regular guy, kind of left alone, kind of like the Hulk, to be honest. And he meets with psychiatrists, and he gets his stuff under control, and he's, you know, kind of just living in an apartment, hanging out, living his life. And I thought that was like a cool dynamic with that character, but they tried to give like the Sentry his powers. It just seemed like it totally ruined the Sentry's characters along the way. So,
yeah, I'd be kind of interested in, like, if you ever read Secret Wars, whatever it was called most recently, because the Molecule Man plays a part in that. He's not like the major focus, but he certainly he's kind of like in the background, I would say, without giving anything away. So
yeah.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. So,
again, it was pretty surprisingly good writing by Bendis, but really just fell apart in the end. Just kind of.
It's always like what happens with his stories.
He's like the Tony Romo of comics.
he gets a lot of paper cuts. He just powers through them.
So. Right, gets broken bones too for some reason. I don't know.
Nice. all right. Well, anything else you guys want to talk about before we take a quick break?
Nope.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about everything that went happen at Baltimore Comic Con. And it was quite a busy con. We'll get to that in just a sec.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
All right, and welcome back. Yes, we are going to go over Baltimore Comic Con 2016, the third year that Talking in Circles has attended the con. And I guess let's kind of just overall impressions of the Comic Con this year. How does it stack up to years past? I mean, obviously a lot's not changing year to year. You're some new guests, some old guests return. But Greg, I know for you it was an eventful con for multiple reasons, kept quite busy. So overall, what were your thoughts on Baltimore Comic Con 2016?
Yeah, it doesn't really change much. There's a lot of different guests that kind of get pushed in and pushed out. But I enjoyed it as per usual. And I, like you said, I was very productive. When I go to these cons anymore, I'm mostly looking to get on commission lists of different artists. And I had a gold mine. I was signed up for three before the show, Stefan Rowe, Ransom Getty, and I am forgetting the third person. But yeah, there's so many on my list that I am seriously forgetting people that I commissioned from. Still have yet to get the commission from Ransom. Super sweet guy. But he was so indecisive, and like I commissioned him before the show, and I still haven't gotten the piece, so I'm still waiting on that. I saw part of what he's working on, and it looks really awesome. The Stefan Rowe piece is really sweet. I got Magic, and she is descending down like these floating pieces of ground. It looks pretty sweet, and there's like fire, like sparks from a fire going off behind her. And it looks pretty freaking awesome. Oh, the third person that I could mention before the show was Mike McCone. I saw him on Periscope painting a World War Hulk or Planet Hulk, whatever you want to call, where he's got the gladiator costume on. And that looked friggin' sweet. So I asked him to do something like that for me, but just with pencil and ink and pen and ink. And so I got a pretty sweet Planet Hulk going on.
That one was pretty awesome. I think that was one of my favorites of the one you got.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
And then I also got, I commissioned from Buzz, who I was kind of scared to go to because I've read online that people have had bad experiences with him, especially if he didn't finish it at the show and trying to pick it up and have him ship the piece to them, and they're not getting it and everything. But he managed to finish mine during the show and everything, so it was no big deal. He was also very cool. He was very talkative with me and very open and sharing about stuff. And I got him to do an Amanda Connor Harley Quinn. Turned out pretty sweet. It's a little bit rougher than everybody else's. It's not as focused and detailed. It's a little bit more sketch quality, but it was really cool. He also ran out of the smaller paper that he was supposed to use for mine, so he upped me up a level on the size of the piece, let's say. So I got upped in size for free, which was pretty awesome. I also stopped off at Ed McGuinness. He's mostly known for his illustrations of the Hulk. I think he's very popular for that. He's also been doing Spider-Man and Deadpool comic that's out. It's a mini. And I got a Nightcrawler from him, and it came out pretty freaking sweet. It's only an 8.5 by 11 pen and ink situation. I always thought Ed McGuinness was an older guy. Nope, he's probably about maybe 5 to 10 years older than us, which probably to a lot of people listening to this is an older person. Yeah. But
he's an old soul, so
yeah. Then
Nightcrawler was pretty sweet too.
Yeah. Then I also got David Peterson, who does a comic called Mouse Guard, and he doesn't really do like people sketches of people or anything like that. You have to have it like some kind of creature or animal or something like that. So I went with Perfect Solution. I thought I got Rocket Raccoon, and I think he came out pretty sweet. He's a little bit more towards the realistic side looking of a raccoon, kind of, if you ask me. It came out really freaking sweet.
Yeah, I think that was of all the ones you got. I thought that was one of the best, just because it was a unique interpretation of the character for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely unique. That is definitely one of my favorites as well. Then I also got, I don't know how I managed it, I got on Yannick Paquette's list. He was like one of the last people I went to for whatever reason. It was just how I kind of planned it out to loop around the con efficiently. But I was able to get on his list, and I got this beautiful Batgirl of Burnside from him. And I found out from his Twitter that somebody commissioned a piece of Wonder Woman, and they got it stolen out of their car. So You got to be careful and keep your eye on your stuff, people. Let's see. I don't know where all my stuff is. And I also got a Beast by Tom Rainey. It's like the old school Beast, not the stupid cat looking Beast. It's more ape like Beast. There's a lot of watercolor going on that one, and that one came out really sweet. I thought really cool perspective shot of his hand kind of coming down in front of him, and he's kind of like leaping up in the background and everything. I also got from Brandon Peterson, I got this awesome Emma Frost. It was gorgeous. It was one of my favorite pieces. It was a nice watercolor, had these great lines going on in the piece and everything. Yeah, and he wanted to know which costume Emma Frost I wanted. I didn't really know offhand. So he was like, well, there's the usual like lace corset kind of situation, And he's like, but there's also this other one where it's kind of comes to an X and everything. He's like, not a lot of people get that one. I go, Brandon, whatever you want to do, whatever sexiest, because that's how Emma Frost kind of goes. She wears whatever's sexy. And so he went with the X kind of design, and it came out freaking sweet. I'm very happy with that one. I kind of have a rule that I don't like to go back to people after I've gotten a commission from them. So I'm kind of like one and done. I'll let anybody else, like everybody else, have a chance. But I'm kind of thinking I want to go back to him and get kind of an Emma Frost kind of in the opposite direction that this one's facing, in a black costume instead of the white costume. I think that would be pretty neat. But I really loved the commission I got from him.
So just go a ahead. Question before you move on. So when you get like commissions like this, I was just kind of curious, like how much like do you give them in the sense of what you want? Like you just tell them the character and they go with it? Or do you like, I want the character and this version of the character? And
you can kind of go nuts with that and go, okay, I want this character like this in this kind of pose. Like you could kind of go nuts with it. I really don't like to do that. I don't like restricting the creativity of the artist. I really like the artist to have fun with the piece so they could kind of like, for example, at the Boston Con, I asked Ryan Bodenheim for a Sentinel. That's all I asked for, was a Sentinel. Like his prices are for single character, like most of the artists are. It's priced for a single character to be drawn. And I was like, all I asked for was a 90s Sentinel. And so he's like, okay. And then he went off and he was like, yeah, so I was going to do him crushing a car, but then I decided to go this different route. And I'm having a lot of fun with it, so I'm hoping you like it. And he showed me what he was doing, and it was the Sentinel fighting at least 10 X-Men. Like, it was crazy. And so I loved that. So that's why I like to go in that direction, because I could have had him just having him crushing a truck or whatever and restricted him down to that. But instead, I just let him go free, and I got 10 extra X-Men characters on that, and it's freaking sweet. I think it's one of my more favorite pieces that I actually own. And he's not like a super well-known artist either, but it's definitely one of my more favorite pieces that I have.
Yeah, I saw that. Like that, the Sentinel itself is pretty awesome. The detail on that, and that is a,
yeah.
It's like, I just want the action figure of that because it looks so cool. So it's,
yeah.
But basically, you had a very busy con. I mean, now that you're moving into this, the hobby of collector art or whatever, not or original art, it's pretty.
It's pretty difficult to arrange all of it and get the pieces, and then it's expensive beyond that. But I'm working on commissions already for New York City. So
nice.
We'll see how that goes.
Very cool, Chuck. For you. I know for Baltimore Comic Con, there was a lot going on. I don't know if it was your first panel, but I know you did attend at least one panel for me. But overall, what were your thoughts on Baltimore Comic Con 2016?
I had a great time. I did go to a panel that was actually the first panel I've ever gone to at a Comic Con. Because usually I kind of just go nuts, like looking for stuff out on the floor. And like, I feel like no matter how many times I comb through the aisles, I always miss something. Like when I go back through, I'm looking, I'm like, holy shit, how did I miss this? Like, I never saw this here. So it's just kind of crazy because there's like, you know, 100 and some vendors there or whatever. But so no, I thought I'd switch it up this year and try a panel out. And I went to the DC panel with you, and I thought that was really cool. I had a good time with that. I don't know if you're going to talk about that later, but
yeah, I'll probably go into that a little bit too. So yeah.
So I enjoyed that. It was cool seeing all the creators up on the stage sort of interacting, having a good time. It was actually really funny, too. So that was a plus. I had a lot of...
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. But yeah, it was interesting because I went to that one, and then I also went to the Marvel one. And like, it'll... anyways, I'll get to that in a sec. So
yeah. So yeah, I enjoyed my first panel. I thought that was really cool. Found a lot of cool things that I was looking for. I know, like every year, I sort of take my master list, what I call my master list, and that's like the individual back issues that I'm looking for to kind of finish off my collection. And every year is kind of dwindling down, and I was able to cross some more things off this year, which was awesome. And, you know, I've obviously found some trades and hardcovers, which is one of the main things I go for there, because, like, there's tons of places that have them for, like, $5 and $10. So I pretty much just try to stock up on trades and hardcovers. And the trick is, though, to not buy too many in the morning, because you have to carry them around all day.
I think that's a dig at me, Chuck. I think that was a dig.
Well, I kind of did it, too. Maybe not quite as bad as you, but
terribly bad. And to kind of interrupt you, I have a story of how nice these artists are. I was over at Ransom as per usual. That was kind of a stop every day for me, because he never had my piece ready for me. But I was standing there talking to him for a while, and he's like, "Oh, so how was your day going?" I'm like, "Good, but I was stupid. I bought graphic novels way too early." He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "A lot." And I turned my bag towards the front of me and showed him. And it was like this messenger bag that's like edges kind of popping out and barely staying closed and everything. And he's like, "Oh, man, that is a lot. That is not right that you're carrying that much. Dude, just put them down here. I'll watch them for you. You could go walk around the con." And he's like, "You could leave it here. No problem." It was towards the end where we were about to leave anyway, and he was kind of my last stop. And I was like, "No, it's all right. Thanks, Ransom." But he just kept insisting, and I'm like, no, I'm good." But it was very sweet of him to like offer a spot for me to put my bag. Yeah, you really don't get that option. But he was very kind and sweet enough to offer that to me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I mean, what he didn't tell you is that he was going to sell it for you, but that's
fine. So. So yeah, I found a lot of cool trades. A lot of stuff that was actually pretty hard to find for me over the last couple of years for some reason. Like I found the Thunderbolts classics, like that first thing with Baron Zemo, Citizen V, or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are kind of hard to find, and I actually ended up finding the first three volumes, which was awesome. I was super stoked about that. Very nice. And the Amazing Spider-Man Civil War, the original one with like the split cover with the white on the bottom, also really hard to find for some reason. So I was able to find that one. But
I don't think it's too hard to find, Chuck. It's right in my closet, I believe.
Well, if you're fortunate enough to have it, yeah. But... So yeah, that was pretty cool. Obviously, you know, every year I try to get a couple of signatures from artists and writers and stuff. This year I was only after two guys. I go see Jim Starlin every year because he's awesome. He's such a nice guy. I had a couple more things for him to sign. The new OGNs he's doing, the Thanos original graphic novels. I took a couple of them that I was missing signature on. So I now have the whole set signed.
Nice.
And the new thing he's working on, the Infinity Entity, which was a little mini series he did. And then I had something old signed as well. And it was a funny story about that, because I first went to Steve Englehart for signatures. And he's a writer that's worked on a lot of stuff, probably mostly well known for working on Avengers stuff and in the 70s and 80s and stuff. And also did a bit of Silver Surfer, which I'm a huge fan of. And that third volume of Silver Surfer, which was pretty popular, he did like the first 30 or so issues, something like that. And so I thought, well, you know, when I get some signatures, like a lot of times I like to get stuff signed that not a lot of people are getting signed. Because it sort of makes them more unique. So, you know, a lot of people are getting their Avengers stuff signed by Englehart. That's the most thing he's most famous for. So I took a few of my Silver Surfer issues, like the first three from that run, and those and everything. And I also had an old Captain Marvel issue that he worked on. And it was very neat because...
Captain Marvel when Captain Marvel was a man, correct?
Yes, I mean like the actual like Marvel, like the Kree Captain Marvel.
Okay, I was just wanted to specify for the audience.
Right, no, good catch. And this was Captain Marvel number 33, which is sort of famous because it was one of the first tellings of the origin of Thanos. It's not the first appearance of him, but it's one of the first tellings of his origin. And the artist on that book happens to be Mr. Starlin. So I got it signed by Englehart, and then when I went to see Starlin, I took it over to him, and he's like, oh, you got some new stuff and some old stuff here, and he goes to sign the Captain Marvel, and he's like, he looks at it, and he's like, oh, look at that. He's like, Englehart took my spot, that bastard. It was hilarious. So he just kind of found a little different spot there, and he signed it. But the other cool thing was, well, it was kind of cool, but kind of upsetting. But as I, you know, as I got my sort of moment in the sun to talk to Jim Starlin for a couple of minutes, I started talking to him a little bit. And, you know, that's kind of like your, that's your me time with the artist. When you get up there, you get to ask a couple of quick questions. You know, it might be like a 2-minute conversation, but that's like your moment to shine, you know? And, you know, as I'm talking to him, this really annoying guy behind me just like completely leaps in our, on our conversation and just absolutely talks over me and completely monopolizes the whole conversation. He starts this whole back and forth thing with Jim Starlin the whole time he's signing my books. And I'm just like, really? Like, come on, you know? And it really kind of pissed me off. But the cool thing was, I think Jim Starlin kind of felt bad that I didn't really get to talk to him as much as I wanted. So while he was sort of fielding the questions of the other guy, he started doing a little doodle, a little sketch inside the cover of my one book, which was pretty awesome. So he just kind of did like a little side profile shot of Thanos. And I seen the other people in line kind of like perking up and they're like looking over his shoulder to see what he's doing. I'm like, yeah, it's my book right there. So it kind of made up for it a little bit. But, you know, I didn't say anything to this guy because I'd overheard him that it's the first time he met Jim Starlin. He was like really excited, you know, kind of bouncing off the ceiling and everything. So I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm not going to be a jerk, even though he kind of was a jerk. You know, I'll be the bigger person. But, you know, I just kind of want to remind people, like, if you get to that situation and, you know, there's somebody in front of you, that's kind of their moment to talk to the artist. So, you know, really try not to kind of butt in on that, because it's really disheartening when you wait in line that whole time to talk to your favorite artist or writer, whatever it might be. And, you know, somebody else just kind of leaps in and basically steals your thunder. So just kind of keep that in mind if you're going to a con, and be respectful of the other people. So
yeah, it's just don't be a jerk. It's a good method.
Basically. Yeah. You know, common courtesy. So that was awesome. That was a pretty cool experience. Also, found a couple of pretty neat toys from my kind of reminiscent of my childhood. I found the Ninja Turtles set that I've been looking for a long time, which is based on the cartoon from the 80s and 90s. And I brought those home. I got a good deal on those, and they're staying right in the package because they look awesome in the package. They got all the all the deco from the cartoon on it, everything, and it's got that logo, the big splash logo and stuff. And those are really cool. I've been looking for those for years, and I was able to find a good deal on them. So that was a high point. And that was about it, except for you know, a couple of you know, maybe celebrity run-ins, which we might get into a little later.
Yeah, you know, just saying kind of a big deal is all you're saying. But
right. Yeah.
So I had a similar call this year. Like last year, I went to a lot of panels, and I wanted to kind of do that again this year because I had a lot of fun, and that kind of almost really springboarded me to get into a lot of comics. I wanted to otherwise. For example, I was at the Valiant Pit panel last year, and I've been reading a lot more Valiant since then. So I wanted to go to a few again this year, and one was obviously like the DC panel that Chuck mentioned, and it was there was a good amount of talent in the room. We had James Tinney in the fourth, Tom King, who's now writing Batman, Dan DiDio, who's currently the editor for DC, and a few other people as well. So it was interesting that, like, it was just fielding questions. I wasn't sure what exactly was going on, but they kind of introduced each other, and Dan DiDio had some general questions he was, you know, giving everyone, and that there were some, I guess, some reveals there, one being that apparently there will be a Legion of Superheroes comic written by someone who was at the in the panel. He didn't reveal who, so I guess it's some sort of game that they're playing. I never really read Legion of Superheroes. I know a lot of people are huge fans of it, but even based upon our comment section from episodes previously, but maybe if that does come out, I'll pick it up. But what was interesting is that panel, and I went to the Marvel panel, which was like the next day, and in that was like Mark Waid, Greg Pak, Charles Soule, and something else I'm forgetting. But it's similar, again, I guess I went into that thinking with the Marvel new relaunch, or not, I guess it's not even a relaunch, the Marvel Now, United We Stand, Divided We Fall, I forget what it's called, that's coming out in October, that they were going to kind of do like a kind of an overview of what's coming up. And that wasn't really the case. It just kind of fielded some questions. And they did have a moderator who was pretty awful. He just, like, I don't know, it felt like he didn't want to be there, or his questions weren't very good. He just had no control of the room, to the sense of Charles Soule kind of just took over and was the one kind of leading the charge. But what was interesting, though, because the questions that were in this room were almost like, I felt like this was like the first time some of the people there, like, saw other human beings in real life and didn't forgot they weren't on the internet. They weren't like super rude, but it was like one guy was like bringing up regarding the mutants and the X-Men, and like, and he was, you know, going off on how he feels that the X-Men or the mutants are getting killed by Marvel because of DC, or like people are like, two or three people asked them, it's like, when you write your comics, too, you have to write them the way Marvel Cinematic Universe tells you how to write them. And they're like, and these are just writers. Like, these guys aren't the people who are in charge of the bigger decisions. They're just like, hey, all we can tell you is what we write our books about, and that's never happened. And Charles Soule actually, like, when the guy was asking the question regarding the mutants, he kind of stopped him halfway. He's like, I get this question a lot. And he kind of runs down. It's like, all right, let's look at the amount of Marvel books that are the X-Men right now. And, you know, Uncanny, All New, Extraordinary, all the Deadpool titles, Wolverine, Old Man Logan, All New Wolverine. He's like, they're not going anywhere. And he's also going to be writing the new event that's coming up, because that's always a new event, but the one that's going to kind of reveal what happened to Cyclops. So I'm interested in picking that up. There are some new things coming out with the new Marvel relaunch that do look like they could be good. Mark Waid's going to be writing Champions, which looks like it could be fun, like a little, almost like a Avengers young, like Young Justice, but with Avengers characters. Yeah,
that looks pretty sweet.
So it was just like in the DC panel, there was just this hope, and everyone was super positive. And overall, most of Marvel was positive, but it did seem like it was almost like, why aren't the comics better, in a way? And I think it was unfair to the writers in a little way, because, you know, they're spending their time, they're coming out, you know, for free, answering questions. And I think the people that were on that board all have really good comics right now. Like, I don't love Mark Waid's All New Avengers, but he has some good stuff. I love his Scarlet Witch comic. That's been amazing. And I love Charles Soule's Deadpool. Greg Pak's totally awesome. Hulk is okay. So I don't know. That was just interesting. And I also went to a Valiant panel. I didn't go to unfortunately, I only went to, they had two. I was able to get to the first one, which was just like a breakdown of Valiant, like a history of Valiant. It was like Valiant 101 for new beginners. And I wanted to go to see if they, like, because I've not read Valiant like for a very long period of time. So I wanted to see if it could fill any holes I wasn't aware of. And it kind of did. And it was kind of cool because they gave you a secret password. And if you went up to their booth and you gave them this password, that you got a free comic. And Valiant has what's called gold editions. And they're like editions of their comics that are gold that you can't buy. You have to earn them. And I was able to earn a Faith number one gold edition, which was kind of cool. So by giving them the password. But so that was fun. And I also went to Boom, had a nice panel. Again, like, they, what I like about Boom is that, like, last year, they do it every year, they just kind of pick a topic, they discuss it, and they were just talking about creating new worlds. This was the big thing they talked about. They had Frank Cho there, and, like, he brought up his book Skyborn and what that was like to do that. And that was interesting, too, seeing all these writers. Hope Larson was there, too. And I guess she has some books for Boom as well, so. And they had a few announcements. They did announce that Grant Morrison, who just finished his Claws miniseries, he's going to have a special in December with that series. I guess it's going to be Claws in Space. And then also there's a King Kong book that was a limited series, but now is going to ongoing. And I've read the first issue of it, and I wasn't super impressed, but I might pick it up again and see if it gets any better. But really, though, the best thing I was able to do in the entire con was I went to Tom King at a panel. It was just him and his editor, and they were talking about Sheriffs of Babylon. And Tom King is just an interesting guy. For those that don't know, he's kind of like the hot new guy in Marvel in comics right now. He's currently writing Vision. He's now the new writer on Batman. He wrote Nightwing. He had Omega Man. He's only been in comics for a short while, but a lot of his books are super, super high regarded right now. I would say like Sheriffs of Babylon is one of the best comics in the last years that I've read. It's this drama that takes place in Iraq shortly after the invasion there. And what I didn't know until recently was that Tom King actually was in service. He was in the CIA, and he was stationed in Iraq during this period of time. And it's not necessarily a story exactly about what he did, but anything of that nature. And what's interesting, he was talking about this book, since it does kind of deal with elements of his time there. Like, it actually has to be approved by the CIA before it can go out. So, like, before the book can be released to public, they have to give it a pass, which was kind of interesting. So, one thing he talked about was that there's a certain element of the book where the CIA is there, and they are kind of going through this mission, and he's like, I could bring the reader into the CIA room that they use, like their intel room, but I know what a CIA room looks like, so either I have to make the artist draw it fake in a fake manner that doesn't reflect it, or draw it for real and have it rejected. So instead, he chose to just have the people kind of waiting in the waiting room as everything was going on. So it was interesting in that end. So in his story of his life, like, he always wanted to be a comic book writer. He started like as an intern, I think, for Dark Horse or DC or Marvel, and then after September 11th, he joined the army, became the CIA, and then he started as a novelist. And it was really intriguing. And I don't want to give all the stories away or anything like that. Or I would say if you go to Comic-Con and he's having a panel, go, because he also just talked about his process and how he chooses to do certain things. He's very open and honest. And like people would ask, like, why did you do this? And he would kind of explain, well, I took this from this comic, and I really liked what this the way he did it and the way I approached it. And it almost made me understand comics on a different level than I think I did previously. So if you're a comic book writer or have desires to be a comic book writer, I would, have the opportunity to hear him speak, do it. And if you're not reading his comics, do it too. I actually kind of want to pick up his novels. I guess he has two that he's written so far. So I had a lot of high hopes for that panel. I was really looking forward to it. It was a really intriguing conversation. It was just two guys in a room talking. So that was quite cool. But beyond that, I too got a number of comics. I was looking for some cheap graphic novels and picked up a few that I want to get into. Really happy to pick up some Birthright Volume 1, Rat King Volume 1. I've heard a lot of good things about those series. And also was able to get caught up with Walking Dead. I'm two graphic novels behind. It was great to get the two newest ones for $5. I was kind of proud of that. But because this one guy had like pretty much every Image series for $5, which was awesome. So
that's impressive.
Yeah.
I was very happy that I got they had a Archie booth set up, and they had a whole bunch of different stuff for Archie, like the new Mark Waid stuff with Fiona Staples, yeah, graphic novel, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Jughead, Afterlife with Archie.
Yeah.
They had all those for $15 last day. Last like 3 hours or so, they knocked the price down to $5. So I picked up the an Archie graphic novel and Sabrina the Teenage Witch graphic novel. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was nice. And I went to go get them too, but they weren't accepting card. And then I'm like, I'll just get cash. But it was like a $5 fee. And I'm like, you know what? I just, out of principle, the fact that it's actually going to cost me the same amount of money to get money that I wanted to buy this comic, I'll just wait. So, yeah. I'm kind of regretting that decision, but what are you going to do? Should have been smarter and had cash, but, can't always win.
Should have asked Dan. I had cash on me.
Cash, never leave home without it.
It's fine. I mean, I read the first some of those already, so it's more of a I'm gonna buy it and not read it, so maybe I shouldn't even do that. But I guess one question to ask you guys: I know you bought a lot of comics, and two of them, Chuck, you already read. Is there anything that you are what are you chomping at the most? You're most excited about to catch up with, you know, book wise, comic book wise?
Probably just reading those Thunderbolts volumes. I think to kind of back and check those out. It's been a while.
I know, Greg, if you can even remember everything that you got.
Yeah, I seriously don't. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, I don't know. I am looking forward to that Archie and Sabrina the Teenage Witch, because I do know those offhand. I know I picked up Greg Rucka's Lazarus. I'm interested in that.
Yeah, I get that. I got that too. I'm really intrigued by that. So.
Yeah, it seems interesting. I just don't remember what else I have in that pile over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I know you got Deadly Class, so I'd be interested in what you have.
Yeah, Deadly Class. There were a lot of ones I picked up for $5 that I know you recommended and were really high on. So I got a bunch of those, and I'm very interested in reading all the ones you have told me are really good and seeing what my own opinion on it is.
So if you hate it, at least it only costs you $5, I guess.
Exactly. And it's a lot of product for $5.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. The one thing with Comic-Cons is that you always have celebrities that do show up. And I think Baltimore Comic-Con doesn't put a huge amount of emphasis on celebrities. They usually have, I think, 6 at the most, and they're never like,
yeah,
they're never, I would say, like the A-list celebrities. Not that these people aren't great people or anything like that, but you're not getting Robert Downey Jr. or Samuel L. Jackson. But, you know, you do get people that are very much part of the comic book world in some instances, and some people that we do highly respect. And I know, Chuck, you did have a pretty infamous run-in with one of those. I don't know if you wanted to talk about it at all.
If I can contain myself, I will.
This is like the Eliza Dushku situation all over again.
Well, let's just say, you know, remember that Desert Island episode we did where we had to pick someone to spend island? I'm changing my answer to this person.
Sean Astin.
No. Well, it was funny because it was on a Sunday, last day of the con, obviously. And it was kind of like down to the last like half hour. I think us three had decided to sort of meet out in the lobby at a certain time. And I was just kind of walking around, making some last minute rounds. Wasn't really looking for anything in particular. I pretty much found everything already. And I think it was even like, there's like 15 minutes left. So I'm like walking around. I'm like, I'm going to go over by the celebrity area. And, you know, there's somebody there that I kind of wanted to just kind of get a glimpse of, even if I could. And that was, of course, Haley Atwell, who was obviously Agent Carter and a.k.a. Captain America's girlfriend in the movies and stuff like that. So I just kind of walked over there, and I knew they charge a lot of money for everything, you know, autographs and photos and all that stuff. And I really didn't want anything to do with that because I don't like paying that much money for that stuff. So I kind of walk over there, and there was a huge line for the dude from Game of Thrones, the Hodor guy. There was a huge line for that guy. I'm like, well, that's weird. And I think Candace Patton was there from Flash, too. She plays Iris on Flash. Wasn't too, you know, excited about meeting her or anything. So I was like, well, I wonder if Haley Atwell's still here. And I kind of look over at the last table, and I see this, it's kind of far away. So I seen this, like, you know, woman sitting at this table, and there's like two people, you know, waiting in this little tiny line. And I'm like, no way, that can't be her. I'm like, there's two people in her line. Now it was the end of the day. Like, they were getting ready to close like very soon. And, so I walked by the table, where the lady's sort of taking the money for everything. I think it was like $60 for a photo with her or something. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. But I asked the lady, I'm like, you know what? I'm like, it can't hurt to ask. So I go up to the lady. I'm like, I'm like, hey, I'm just interested in, just meeting Haley Atwell. I'm like, just to say hi or something. I'm like, is there any charge for that? And she's like, no, you can come on back. And I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah, come on back. So she showed me where to go, and I just had to wait a couple of minutes because there was only two people in front of me. And the staging girl had me waiting there at the one thing, and then she sent me up to her. So it was cool. I got to talk to her for a minute, and I asked her, I got to ask her a question, and it was something silly, like, would you marry me or something like that? Now, I had asked her, what was more fun to work on, the Captain America movies or the Agent Carter TV show? What was kind of more fun for her? And I think I really caught her off guard. She didn't really know quite how to answer it. It was kind of funny because it was like, if anybody's going to be stuttering and tripping over themselves here, I think it would be me, because I could literally feel my face like glowing red. I was like, I was blushing so much. Maybe that's why she got all nervous. She's like, oh my God, this poor kid like crushing on me right now. But it was funny. She's saying that I think she kind of had a little bit fun with the show because it was so much more stretched out, and you got to do a lot more with the filming and everything. There was a lot more involved in it and everything. And, she met a lot of great people and everything like that. So it was neat. We just had a little quick conversation. She has the cute British accent in real life as well. So, and I'm still sticking to the fact that, that's where I got my cold from. I think I got my cold from Haley Atwell. So,
Chuck, I'm not sure if you want to reveal this, and we could have Dan edit it out, if you want, but, now I forget where I'm going with this. Damn. Showstopper.
She is single. Yes.
No. I remember now. You were telling me that you wanted to tell her how beautiful you thought she was, and you were having an issue trying to come up with how to say that to her. But then you told me like before that like what you were what you thought of her and everything, and I thought that was the perfect way to do it. So do you want to reveal what you said to me before the? Do you remember?
Well, what's our rating on this show?
No, it wasn't X rated. You're a classy guy.
No, it was. I didn't really want to tell her that because I felt creepy for some reason. I don't know
why.
Dude,
I went up to Agnes Garboska and it was like, I'm going to be a creepy guy for a second here, but I just wanted to let you know you are absolutely gorgeous. She was totally cool with it. She did that little girl down face thing, embarrassed kind of thing. And she said, thank you. which made her even more adorable. So I like...
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just I don't really like to say those type of things too much to strangers, obviously, but celebrities. I just feel like an oozing fanboy, and they probably get that crap like all the time. So I kind of like just wanted to shy away from it. But if I were to tell her, it would be that you know, it's not just like some celebrities you meet and they look totally different than on camera, you know, whether it's just the makeup or, the angles and lighting and stuff like that. But I think she really, truly does have a natural beauty to her. As I stood there, like, 2 feet from her face, she really is like absolutely gorgeous. So.
See, and I thought that, and maybe people can leave in the comments, but I thought that was an absolutely perfect. It would have been perfect for you to say to her. I thought that was very well said.
Yeah, very, very natural beauty. But yeah. She was very sweet, very nice. And, I didn't want to pull out my camera and kind of take a selfie because they're actually sort of being, like, jerks with that. Like, even, like, behind the waiting line, which was, like, 50 feet away from the tables where they were. You have the regular con goers kind of walking by, and people were trying to just kind of like hold their phone up and zoom in a little bit. And you're not even going to see anything that well because it's so far away. But, the guy would come running up to him, waving his arms like, no pictures, no pictures, put your phones away. Like they're kind of being jerks about it. And, especially I knew, not paying anything. I didn't pay the money to get the photo and everything. I'm like, if I pull my phone out, they're gonna like tackle me or something. like Steve Rogers is gonna come out and like hit me with a shield or something. So
that he tried to do that when you tried to kiss her. That was the.
Well, let's just say that she's no longer Captain America's girlfriend. I told her I knew all the hot spots in Baltimore, so we showed her a good night on the town. No.
Yeah. So we also had another run-in with another celebrity. I bring Sean Astin, you know, the guy, Rudy, Samwise. Chuck and I
Goonies.
Were Goonies, so many things. We were, you know, I think at some place looking at graphic novels and, you know, just a horde of people start walking by and we're like, oh, look, it's Sean Astin with a group of people. I guess he just does that. It's a thing since the Lord of the Rings. I don't know. But no, he was like periscoping and I guess around the con and because they announced it on the announcer table thing. And he stopped there and he was talking to, there was an upstairs and he was like kind of going back and forth with them. And he was just kind of standing there, we're like kind of taking photos and just kind of just, you know, watching. And then I have my phone out and he kind of turns around and looks at me and like is walking right towards me. And I always thought he was like, kind of making fun of me because I was taking a photo of him like right there, which, hey, you know, maybe so. But then he like he kind of zooms in and he's like looking, like pushing the phone back and forth on my chest. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to get a photo of you because I had my Baltimore Orioles jersey on, you know, of where we're at. And he's like, how'd they do last night? Did they win? I'm like, yeah, they did. He's like, great. And he walked away. I'm like, that was weird. But so I was just like, Samwise asked for advice from me. So I don't, it's funny because I have all these bad photos of him like looking the other direction. But when he was legitimately right in front of me, I didn't take a photo. So, what are you going to do?
So. You were too confused by his weirdness.
I was. And I was actually trying to find his Periscope to see if I could find that clip. But I forgot that I don't know what Periscope is. So I'm so
you just have to Google down Periscope.
Exactly.
And it'll show up.
Like I went to his Facebook
good
page.
Good movie.
Facebook page, but I didn't see it there. So I don't know if it's like a thing like Snapchat. It's where like you have to watch it and it goes away if it's not live.
It stays up for about 24 hours because that's how I actually watched Mike McCone painting last night again. I did not commission any more from him. Yeah, I watched him do the painting on Periscope. It's you watch it kind of live as they're doing it, and then it stays up on Periscope for about 24 hours. So,
I could have checked it out, but I did not. So, what are you gonna do?
See, I was looking for it, and I ended up finding another video where, like, I guess while he was in Baltimore, he was doing some sightseeing, and he went to this historical building. I don't know exactly what it was. It's not a place that I've ever been to. I don't know if it was something pretty significant historically. It wasn't Fort McHenry or anything like that, but it was something else. I guess he's into history. So he had a video about that, and I was like, oh, you know, maybe the Comic-Con one will be on here too, but I couldn't find it. So
yeah. But it was interesting. He seemed like a nice guy. I mean, just like it was kind of random. He's very small dude, so...
See, what Dan didn't tell you is that he was zooming in because Dan had the ring on a necklace, you know, hanging down, and he was looking for Precious, so.
Yeah, but, yeah, it was an eventful con. I'm excited, you know. It's our fourth time in a row going, third time with Talking in Circles, so. I was actually, it's relatively known for its, you know, it's the most comic book of a comic cons. They have the Harvey Awards there as well, which I thought were just, I didn't realize how prestigious those actually are. They're probably not the same levels as the Eisners, but they're not that far off. And
yeah, and they had Jim Lee and everybody there, and like other like artists and creators that weren't at the con were at the Harvey Awards, and it's like, well, why can't they show up at the con as well? That's like,
I think Tom King did win, if I'm not mistaken, and won like yes, best writer. Did. And Valiant was interesting because they had 50 nominations but they didn't win anything.
And, holy shit!
Yeah, I was actually
it's a Valiant effort.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually at the one panel when it was at Valiant. The guy's like, I actually think it'll be impressive if we have 50 nominations and win nothing because it'll be notable on that end. And then that happened. So I don't know if he was trying to just to play, you know, set himself up be pessimistic.
Expectations.
Yeah, have low expectations, but, you know, what have you. So, in the one category, they actually had 4 out of the 5 nominations, but Chip Zdarsky won for Best Humor Book, I guess, for Howard the Duck, which is really good. Yeah. But they had, like, 4 of the books in that, and which is probably why they lost, because they probably just split the vote, so... But I don't know. Anything else you guys want to bring up regarding Baltimore Comic Con?
You mentioned about, like, those other artists being at the Harvey Awards and stuff. Like, you know, why couldn't they come to the con? Could you imagine if Jim Lee was there? Like, that would have been crazy. His line would have been, like, around on the outside of the entire room or something. Well,
there were quite a few lines that were pretty huge. I lined up for Lemire, and that line was forever, and he was signing every book that you brought up to him. We had one guy that, like, I was super close to the table. I'm like, yes, only a couple more moments, but no, not really, because this one guy came up and he put, like, a handful of comics up on the table, and he's signing, Jeff Lemire signing. He gets down to the bottom. The guy pulls out another freaking huge stack and puts it on the table. And I'm like,
I hate when people do that.
Are you freaking serious? That is like, he's only concerned with himself. Like, that guy has his head up his ass. I saw him a couple times during con, and I just wanted to punch him in the face.
I just wanted to mention that too. A couple more common courtesy things, like, you know, taking huge stacks. Like, I mean, I realize you want to, you know, meet your artist. You don't know when you're going to meet them again and everything, but it's kind of a jerk move with that many. Like, you know, you're talking people with, like, stacks of, like, 40, 50 comics. Like, that's just getting ridiculous, you know? I try to keep it, like, 5 or less, to be honest.
That's,
like,
mine is 5 or less.
My little, you know, that's kind of, like, my little limit. And
New York City, I'm taking, like, 1 comic for each creator, and that's not me being courteous. That's me being courteous to my back, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't want to carry a whole huge stack of them the entire time, so I'm trying to limit myself on that.
And even people, like, you know, looking through boxes, sort of. This sort of happened to me. Like, you know, you kind of have to go quickly because there's other people waiting to get in there and look through the boxes and things. And you know, I had these couple of, like, younger, like, high school kids, and they're like they're pulling everything out of the box, and they're, like, talking about it, and oh yeah, this was really cool, and it's, like, so slow. I was like, I want to say something so bad. I'm like, dude, like, other people are waiting to get in here. There's, like, 3 of us standing here, and you guys are, like, having conversations.
Buy or get out of the way.
Right, like, you know, you flip through the box, you should know what you're looking for, and, you know, it should take a minute, and you move to the next one. You know, you can't really take all day to look through this stuff. But it happens. Most of the people, I honestly, were really great, though.
Yeah.
We got some cool pictures of cosplayers. And I usually don't ask the cosplayers. I kind of just, like, stop when other people stop to take a picture.
Yeah.
I kind of, like, mooch off of that moment. So I jump in and I take a little picture and everything. But the cosplayers are always great. Like, they're always willing to do pictures with kids and all that stuff. So I think most of the people were really great there. So definitely another great year.
Yeah. Actually, I was at one spot, like, picking up comics, and there was this one guy who I think had certain social issues or something like that, but he was just talking to the one store owner, and I guess someone called, or I don't know, the one vendor, about, like, everything, about, like, every book he was looking at, and just endless amounts of stuff, and the store owner was very courteous, and, you know, I'm guessing he probably deals with that a lot, being a comic book store owner. But it was just, like, I felt bad for the guy because it's just, like, he's not stopping and he's just talking about everything, like, it randomly with no apparent reason from one thing to the next. It's like, I'm talking about Green Arrow TV show and then now I'm talking about this other comic that is just that was interesting. So
was it like the neighbor kid from Home Alone when he gets in the van, starts asking a billion questions?
Kind of, yeah.
What kind of van is this? Does it get good gas mileage? How fast can it go?
It was like that, but then he would answer his own questions. So
that's funny.
But yeah, so very cool. All right, well, I'm going to bring this episode to a close. And if you want to get in contact with us, there's a lot of different ways to do so. You can email feedback@geekastradio.com or go to geekastradio.com. and comment on the episode post. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Talking in Circles, GCRN. You guys are also on Twitter. What are your Twitter names?
I am at Heroic Age Chuck.
I am at The Create Forge. Or if you want to check out the art I got at the convention, go to Comic Art Fans and check for Greg Bepler. So.
There you go. And I'm at Movie Revolt. But that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel, same podcast feed. But for now.
This has been Chuck, or Haley at Wells' new boyfriend.
This has been Greg, or the Typhoid Kid.
And this has been Dan, and we've been talking in circles. We'll see you next week.
We've been talking in viruses.
Yeah. Hopefully this doesn't actually, you know, get people sick.
That'd be terrible if it transmitted through the computer like that.
It'd be very contagious.
But I wish no, like, my greatest, well, maybe my greatest enemy, my cold, because it was, ugh.
I don't know who my greatest enemy would be. That's a top, next top five. Top five best enemies.
Your real life enemies.
Brian Michael Bendis.
The one girl I work with.
Oddly still Dr. Doom. It's weird. So.